Hello and welcome to the OnFit podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. On this week's episode, we talk about the ECB's monetary policy decision happening on the 23rd of January. This is Martin Stepan from London, and today we talk with Francesco Papadia, Senior Fellow at Bruegel and former Director General for Market Operations at the European Central Bank. We have the first ECB monetary policy decision of 2020. It's the second one for Christine Lagarde. We have a few new faces on the ECB Council, Fabio Panetta and Isabel Schnabel. Some of the key themes that we certainly can expect is the ECB review of monetary policy, and then perhaps some of the challenges that we have on the macroeconomic side in Europe. If we take a look at the macroeconomic situation firstly in Europe, we had recent reports from the IMF, which has revised economic growth to 1.3%. We have the continuing challenges of slow growth, low interest rates, challenges with inflation, there's concern about manufacturing. How do you look at the European economic outlook?
I think that over the last few weeks, maybe a couple of months, the situation has somewhat improved. Two of the big geopolitical risks, the China-US trade war and Brexit, have not gone away, but have lost in intensity. So the worry that came from these two developments has somewhat subdued. It's clear that it's not away. It's not that we don't have to worry about those anymore, but the intensity of the worry has gone down. And correspondingly, I think the news that came from especially soft kind of information are a bit better than they used to be. But this is better within the field of mediocrity, I would say. We don't move away from that. The tone is a little better, but not significantly better.
What are your expectations for the ECB's macro assessment? Would you see much change from the December meeting that we have there?
No, not really. I don't expect that there will be much change. They were mediocre. They will continue to be mediocre. And I think that more generally, the ECB is, as far as concrete policy measure is concerned, is attitude. It's waiting to see how things move. As I think you said at the beginning, what we can expect at the press conference is information about the review, more than anything connected to specific measures.
Yes, let's take a look at this review. Obviously, Christine Lagarde has mentioned this before. There's been quite a chunky ECB staff document. It was published in December, which provided some guidance on some of these challenges. What are some of your concerns, perhaps also what do you think will be some of the aspects that will be talked about here?
Well, I think the first comment I would like to make is that it is easy to overdo the changes that could come out from the review. I see more continuity than change in the ECB. I saw more continuity than change when moving now 8 years ago from Trichet to Draghi, and I see more continuity than change now moving from Draghi to Lagarde, even considering the changes in the board that you have mentioned. I'm not saying that the ECB is not changing. I'm saying that the ECB is changing without jerks, is changing without ruptures. It's a more gradual change. Of course, the ECB that Draghi left is different from the one that Trichet left. But the change has been more organic than just the following jumps in a way or the other. So my first message is more continuity than change. And change is along a line, not with a broken shape. So this is my first comment. And then I think that, as in the case of the Fed, we don't quite know where this review is going. Of course, one justification, which is a bit a weak justification to have a review, was we only had it in 2003. It's now time to have it. So time passing is not a very strong justification. A stronger justification is so much has changed with the crisis that, yes, it's useful to take stock. And as you said, I mean, the ECB has tried to do that, but more on a retrospective than on a prospective basis. So I think we don't quite know where they are going or where they want to go. I do have some expectations of what could be there and what could not be there, and we can talk about this in a minute.
So let's take a look at a review of the objectives of the ECB. And here, particularly, what comes to mind is the inflation calculation. And there are a few ideas on the table. Firstly, should the inflation target be changed? Should it be simplified? Christine Lagarde has talked about simplifying things, and perhaps to what extent should we be looking at what the Fed or the Bank of England do and looking at a 2% aspect. There's been calls from François de Gallo to talk about flexibility and having a more symmetrical inflation targeting. We had calls from Klaus Knot and Benoît Cœuré to talk about targeting of bands.
One thing that I expect the review to do is to formalize changes that to some extent have already taken place. And this had particular to do with the symmetry and the use of core inflation. Draghi, over the last few months of his tenure, made the point that, yes, of course, our objective is symmetric. As we have been below 2%, we could be above 2%. We would be equally worried about being above as being below. But that is not really what is in the statute book of the ECB. As it is, the objective has some kind of asymmetry. So de facto, they moved away from it, but formally, it's still asymmetric. So I think one thing the review could do is make the symmetry formal. And the other thing that the review could do is to make it formal another change that has already taken place de facto, which is the move from headline inflation to core inflation as main objective. And for many, many years, the ECB and the Fed had different ways to take into account the fact that over the short to medium term, inflation is not determined only by monetary policy, but also by idiosyncratic shocks. And you want to wash out these idiosyncratic shocks from your measurement of inflation. The Fed used to do that by looking at core inflation, so taking away the volatile components of the PCE, which is their preferred measurement of inflation, while the ECB did that by using an average over time, over the medium term. These were technical differences, really, more than any kind of philosophical differences. But the ECB has clearly moved towards giving more weight to core inflation. I mean, I haven't done a count of the term core inflation, but I think that this has increased in the utterances of the ECB. So I think these two things, which are more clarification and formalization, making it symmetric and moving toward core inflation, will be in the review.
Lagarde has pledged to make the ECB closer to the people. So in light of perhaps new changing of inflation calculation, there's been talk about perhaps including housing costs in inflation calculation.
Yes, that has been a talk, and this is likely to be dealt with in the review. But I see this housing issue more as a statistical issue to better reflect the cost of housing in the consumer price index than any economic kind of change. It's clear that in the perception of people, the housing costs are more important than they are currently in the calculation of the harmonized consumer price index. So that is something that they could do, but again, would be more statistical than an economic. Another aspect, maybe more important of what you said about Madame Lagarde saying we have to get closer to the people, I think starts from a kind of odd situation. If you look at Eurobarometer results, the euro is very popular, but the European Central Bank is pretty unpopular. And you would think that the two should go together. I mean, the euro, in a way, is the European Central Bank, is in the European Central Bank, in a way, is the euro. So you have this difference of appreciation for the euro and the ECB. And I think that this is connected to communication problems. And under Madame Lagarde, the IMF has tried quite hard to get to a wider audience. And so not limit itself to people who are really interested in economic and financial matters, but go to a wider audience. Also using new tools, basically internet-based tools. So I think that one other part of the review could be about communication and how to get to a wider audience with new tools, which I think is useful, but could imply some risks because communication to a wider audience may be more difficult than communication to a narrow audience. It has to be simpler. It has to be more basic. And so the risk of miscommunication increases as you move to this new style of communication.
Communication, exactly, has been very much on the forefront of a lot of central banks, and perhaps something that the Fed has obviously done is opening up to a wider audience, meet the Fed sorts of meetings with not just market participants, but people and representatives from the real economy as well. So do you think we can see perhaps more meetings of this kind of caliber?
I think that unlike the Fed, the complication in Europe is many languages, many central banks, and so it would not be easy to mimic exactly what the Fed has been doing or is doing. And by the way, when I said it's not clear the direction in which the reviews, even that of the Fed, is going, because yes, we know that they're talking, they're listening, but we don't quite know which concrete changes they will carry out to their strategy. So coming back to the ECB, yes, they would try to move to a wider audience, but I think that national central banks should play an important role there because of language problem, because of cultural differences. So it would be of an order of magnitude more complicated in the euro area, but I think they will try and do something of that kind.
If we look at some of the instruments that the ECB has, obviously the asset purchases, the cheap bank loans, negative interest rates, can we expect any changes on this front here?
Well, the point of departure is that both interest rates and QE, not to mention forward guidance or special refinancing operations, have reached or are about reaching the end of their effectiveness and scope. So I think this is a point of departure, that it's difficult with current instruments to do more. It's not obvious that they need to do more. I mean, they've been promising that they would get closer to 2% now for 5 years. They still hope they will do it and that they will not need to do more, but it's by no means assured. And if they need to do more, it's not clear with what they could do more. I mean, I have my own ideas here. And in particular, I've been trying for quite some time to say that interventions in the market for inflation derivatives could be a way to influence inflationary expectation, which seem to be a hurdle in having inflation moving more clearly towards 2%. So either on swaps or on options on inflation derivatives, I think could provide a new tool to the ECB if more action was needed.
Would that require any changes in the statutes of the ECB to enact such a change, or what would be the implications for the ECB to do something, as you say?
No, I don't think that there would be any statutory change or any statutory difficulty. I mean, the ECB would entirely be free to do that from a statutory point of view. There are quite significant technical problems. The most important one, I think, is that the market for inflation derivatives, either swaps or options, is a small market. And so a big, big animal coming into a small market, you don't know exactly what this could produce. Of course, on the optimistic side, you say, well, yes, the market will grow just because there is such a new important player. Or the negative is the market would be swamped by this big new player. So this is the biggest problem. Then, of course, there are other problems at what price the ECB would enter, say the option market, with whom would they transact. And in my view, they should transact with more than banks. So they should transact also with investment funds, with pension funds, with insurance companies. So in order to diffuse their action more generally, I think that this would be less extreme then moving towards different forms of modern monetary theory, kind of actions like helicopter money or funding the budget deficit of countries. So I think it would be effective, but not as extreme as some of the measures that are being proposed.
We talked a little bit about the new members coming in terms of Isabel Schnabel and Fabio Panetta. We also have almost half of the governing council will have been members for less than a year. So interestingly, it makes it a quite new group of central bankers coming together. Looking at, you know, your comments where you said that there can be challenges of miscommunication, there's certainly certain tensions between obviously the north and southern countries still. And then if you look at Isabel Schnabel in particular here, because her new role is certainly looking at the QE aspect, and interestingly, she disagreed with ECB's decision in September to restart the bond buying program, arguing that it was too excessive. And now with her role as a responsibility over this, what do you think could be some of the implications?
When I mentioned continuity and change, and I said I think that there is more continuity than change, I did not mention one inertial factor in the ECB, which is the staff of the ECB and the committees of the ECB. The committees is maybe a component that is not very well known to people outside of the ECB. Even if Draghi has mentioned these committees very often, the typical sequence of new measures under Draghi was, okay, in the council, we have started discussing this. We have asked our committees to come up with analysis and proposals. And then after a while, well, the committees have worked. We have taken our decision, and our decision are this and that. So these committees, and there are committees at the ECB for any kind of activity you could think of, from banknotes printing to statistics to monetary policy to market operations to financial stability and so on and so forth. In these committees, which are chaired by people from the ECB, but all national central banks participate, constitute an important source of information and ideas for the governing council. And they, of course, do technical work, but to some extent, they also anticipate or prepare the discussion that will take place in the governing council, because, of course, any member of the governing council will have talked with these people in these committees. And so he will know what the position of the other central banks is. He will know the argument and so on and so forth. So I think these committees give a kind of ballast to the ECB, create a kind of inertia in a good sense to the ECB, avoiding volatility in the decision of the ECB. This does not apply, though, following up on what you said, to communication. Communication is a preserve of the governing council and of the executive board. So there, as I said, you could have more volatility. And market participants, I think, should be careful in not reading too much from utterances from the ECB going forward, in particular if they move to this new style of communication to a wider audience.
If we look at the timings of the review itself, it's set to finish by the end of the year. How ambitious do you think this is? We look at the Fed review, that's certainly taking more time.
Well, I think it's short. I mean, 12 months or 11 now, it's not a long period to organize this. Again, as I said, with the additional complication that the ECB is not a single institution, but the euro system, I mean, is the ECB and all national central banks. So it's a bit more complicated. So it's short. And this is maybe also a reason why I don't think that we will see dramatic changes coming from the review. If they would have had thought that dramatic changes would come, possibly they would have taken more time to complete the review.
Two things which Lagarde has also mentioned that are certainly important is, one, technology. So here, the challenges of the rise of a central bank digital currency, and climate change. There are a number of ways how the ECB could become more involved here. Some of the boldest ideas, obviously, look at green bonds and QE, or, for example, discouraging bonds for carbon-intensive investments. To what extent do you think some of these ideas could be enacted?
Well, of course, I think that Lagarde has committed to making the ECB greener. So there will be something there. However, we have to be careful in understanding what a central bank can do for climate policy. I think the statutory cover for the ECB to do something there is in the Maastricht Treaty. The Maastricht Treaty says that the ECB should pursue price stability, and if price stability is not negatively affected, it should support the general policy of the EU. And it's clearly a general policy of the EU to do something for the environment. So the statutory cover for the ECB to do something is there. Then comes the subtle problem of what to do. And here I think there are two possible concepts. On one hand, the ECB could just recognize that environment issues should be taken into account more properly into its action. Say, for instance, in risking assets in its collateral framework. I mean, which risks could come from stranded assets, from brown risk for its collateral framework, as well as for QE. So not doing something special, but just recognizing that maybe there are changes that are coming from the environment that are not properly taken into account as yet. So just adapting its behavior and its action to this new enhanced risk. And the other possibility is to do something beyond that. So, okay, we recognize that there is this brown risk, but on top of this, we do something more for the environment. And whether they would go for this second aspect, I don't think so. For instance, I don't think that they would favor green assets in QE beyond what is deriving from a better assessment of environment risk. So I think one should be quite cautious in understanding that there are very clear limits to what the central bank can do for climate. It should do as much as it can, but it cannot do much.
And then the second point I mentioned around the digital currency. So there's an ECB task force investigating the potential for the ECB to adopt a digital currency, which would certainly give it greater control over money in the economy. But obviously there are some risks here. And what do you think of the prospects, given what you mentioned that you would expect some smaller change to actually happen?
Well, I think this technical digital thing is something big, something that we will be discussing for quite some time, and we may see important changes. My sense is that the ECB will try and build on what it has done already. For instance, I mean, a little known innovation that was enacted by the ECB now in November of 2018, if I remember correctly, is to allow instant payments in the euro area, 365 days per year, 24 hours a day. That means that if banks connect to this system, which is called TIPS, they could offer to their clients the ability of transferring money very cheaply, I think a tenth of a cent over the entire euro area, as I said, instantly, anytime in the year. So that is something that is already there. And this is somehow dealing with the issue of the cost and timing and complication of the transfers within the euro area. So if they would build on this together with maybe other central banks, the Fed is working on a similar system, the central banks could offer facilities to provide payments also cross-border, which is the real issue, in a way that would somehow enter in competition with projects like Libra from Facebook. So I think that they would try and work incrementally on what they have already. Just to add one element to this, I understand that Sweden, you know, Sveriges Riksbank, is one of the most advanced central banks in digital currencies. And I understand that the Sveriges Riksbank is thinking of connecting to the TIPS system of the euro area. And this would be very important because then you would have this system working with two currencies, the Swedish krona and the euro. And then the step would be obvious to say, okay, let's also try and have payments that cross the currency borders. So it starts in euros and it ends in Swedish krona or vice versa. And then when the Fed will have done its system, let's add the dollar to that. This would not be like Carney's global digital currency, but would be a step in that direction. So my sense is, yes, big issue, a lot of work. They will try to work incrementally on what they've done already.
We've got some warning shots from Mark Carney, who has talked about the fact that central banks have low ammunition to deal with a potential recession if it were to come. This has certainly been echoing the calls from both Lagarde from last year, Ben Bernanke, Janet Yellen, have certainly been calling for governments to enact more fiscal stimulus to be able to stabilize growth in the next recession. There's certainly challenges when it comes down to global debt levels, which we certainly see as being quite high at the moment. What are your perhaps expectations here? Can we see this developing further? What are the challenges?
Well, I think that some comments have been made to the effect that Madame Lagarde has no specific central banking or economic competences. Of course, this is relative because she has been the managing director of the IMF. She has been finance minister in France, so she does have. But it's true that she does not have as much technical knowledge as Draghi, for instance, with his PhD from MIT. But what is often said, I don't know Madame Lagarde personally, but from looking from outside, she has a good way of talking with politicians. I mean, that she honed this at the IMF. And so she could maybe more effectively than Draghi make government understand that they have to do more for the European economy, that they have to do more on the fiscal side, that they have to do more on the structural side. So I think that we can expect that she would be more effective in pushing governments to do what they need to do for the European economy. Again, not only on the fiscal side, but also on the structural side. And we see some tentative signs of this in Germany, which of course is the biggest case here. Nothing conclusive as yet, but also the intellectual climate in Germany is somewhat changing in favor of a more fiscal action. Again, there is not much to be seen in actual policy moves as yet, but one sees an incipient move and Lagarde could foster this move.
Francesco, it's been great to speak to you about the upcoming ECB monetary policy decision on 23rd of January. We've talked about the macroeconomic outlook for Europe, the potential change for the ECB's objectives and instruments, some of the challenges that the ECB has in terms of its communications. We also discussed how the ECB can get more involved in combating climate change and to what extent are central banks running out of ammunition. If you've enjoyed the program, then please do leave us your comments and follow us on our OnFifth channel. We are now on iTunes and Spotify, and we release podcasts every Tuesday.